All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Mahamu Shivaraya. Krishna Prasthaya Vidhaya Srimati Bhaktivinoda Swami Jaya. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachani Nivasesi Sanyagani Paskutya Vesatana. Vande Yam Sri Guru Sri Chapada Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sadhana Raghunatam Vitam Sam Sajiva Sadvaitam Sadvaitam Palujana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Ravita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Text 7. Mata parataram nanyat kinchidasti janamjaya mai sarvamidam protam suche manigana iva. Let's chant. Mataha. Beyond me, Parataram, superior, na, not, anyat, kinship, anything else, asti, there is, Dhananjaya, O conqueror of wealth, mayi, in me, sarvam, all that be, idam, which we see, protam, is strung, sutre, on a thread, mani ganaha, pearls, eva, like. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. What a beautiful, beautiful simile. Pearls on a thread. You see the pearls and you don't see the thread. How do you know the thread is there? Because the pearls are in the line. They're not all... You're wearing some pearls, huh? Are those pearls? Are you in the white? You're wearing pearls? Are those pearls? So how do we know there's a thread? Because they're not falling on the floor. Even though we don't see the thread. Purport. There is a common controversy over whether the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal or impersonal. As far as the Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the Absolute Truth is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, and this is confirmed in every step. In this verse in particular, it is stressed that the Absolute Truth is a person. How is this verse stressing that the Absolute Truth is a person? Mind. And saying there is nothing beyond me. So people sometimes think that the Brahman is superior, and sometimes the Brahman manifests as a person. Right? But elsewhere Krishna says, Brahmanohi pratisthanam, the Brahman is resting on me. Krishna is saying there's nothing superior to me, so there can't be Brahman superior to Krishna. That the personality of Godhead is the supreme absolute truth is also the affirmation of the Brahma Samhita. Ishwara Paramaha Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. So Ishwara Paramaha, the supreme Ishwara, the supreme controller, is Krishna. That is, the supreme absolute truth personality of Godhead is Lord Krishna, who is the primeval Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure. Govinda, reservoir, where everything comes from. And the eternal form of complete bliss and knowledge. These authorities leave no doubt that the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. The impersonalist, however, argues on the strength of the Vedic version given in the Svetashvara Upanishad, Tato yad utarataram tad arupam anamayam ya etad vidur amritaste bhavanti ate tare dukam eva pianti. In the material world, Brahma, the primeval living entity within the universe, is understood to be the supreme amongst the demigods, human beings, and lower animals. But beyond Brahma, there is a transcendence, who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations. Anyone who can know him also becomes transcendental, but those who do not know him suffer the miseries of the material world. Those who have a book, you'll notice in this quote from the Svetashvara Upanishad is the word arupam, which literally means no form. So beyond Lord Brahma is that which has no form. The impersonalist puts more stress on the word arupam, but this arupam is not impersonal. It indicates the transcendental form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, as described in the Brahma Samhita quoted above. So how do we know that this arupa means no material form instead of no form? The literal meaning, so many times Prabhupada will say to take the literal meaning, right? But the literal meaning of arupa just means no form. So on what basis can Srila Prabhupada say that we can understand this arupa not literally, but through interpretation? On what basis?
Well, he's quoting scriptures.
Yes, he's quoting scriptures. This is a very important point, that sometimes the scriptures always say exactly the same thing everywhere. But the very famous verse that one should follow the Mahajans, the scriptures can have differing opinions, just like the Munis have differing opinions. There are differing opinions given in different parts of the Shastra. Why?
For a different class of Christian reading.
Yes, exactly. And this is one of the beauties of the Vedic religion. So if you take other religions that are prevalent on the earth today, Islam or Christianity or Buddhism or Judaism, they can't be for everybody. They're saying everybody has to do exactly this, and if you don't do exactly this right now, you're finished, correct? You have this one life, and in this one life, you have to believe this exactly. They have a little creed. You have to believe this creed, and you have to do this thing, and everyone has to do this thing, and anyone who doesn't do this thing now, right now, immediately in this life, is finished. When? How long are they finished for?
Forever.
They're finished forever. So how can that be for everybody? You can see how many people in the world reject this idea of religion, but the Vedic religion is not at all like that. When the world was full of Vedic religion, there was something for everybody. There was even something for the demons. Right? Sudakshina, that demon son of Kashiraj, his rituals for calling Dakshinagni to kill Krishna, where did those rituals come from? From the Vedas. So there's something in the Vedas for everyone. There's something for the demons. There's something for the tribals. There's something for people in the modes of ignorance, passion, goodness. And there's something for people in transcendence. So everyone can be under the umbrella of the Vedas and gradually make progress. And even in transcendence, there's something for the impersonalists. There's something for the yogis. There's something for everyone. There's a different form of Krishna. You can worship Ram. You can worship Nisinga. You can worship Varaha. How wonderful. I mean, uniting the world under Vedic religion would mean that everyone would become connected with the Vedas in their own way. And of course, the difficulty with that is that in the scriptures you'll find many things that appear to be contradictory. That in one place it says one thing, in one place it says something else. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna for one who's been honored, dishonor is worse than death. But don't worry about this honor or dishonor. And which are you going to follow? Right? So different places, different things, because for different people in different situations. So then how is one going to understand the ultimate? One has to follow the Mahajanas. And one has to understand all these different quotes together. So if both the statement of the Bhagavad Gita that we're reading today, Matyapadatanamnanyat, and Brahma Samhita, Ishwar Paramahakrishna, if those two statements can be true, and also the statement from the Svetasvara Upanishad of Arupam, if that can be true, or another from the Brahma Samhita, Advaita Machuta Manadi Mananta Rupam, Ananta Rupam is unlimited forms, and then Arupam, no form. So when you take all those statements together, you put them all together, Arupam must mean no material form. Because if Arupam meant no form, the other statements would become false. So by having Arupam mean no material form, all of the statements together can be true. Okay, other verses in the Svetasvara Upanishad substantiate this as follows. So now Prabhupada is not only calling from the Brahma Samhita and from the Bhagavad Gita, but in the same scripture. Vedaham etam purusham mahantam ajityavarnam tamasaparastat tam eva vidit vati mrityumeti nanyad bhanta vidyate yanaya yasmat param na param asti kinchit yas man nani yo no jaya nosti kin no jaya yosti kinchit viksha iva stabdo divi tischar yekas tenedam purnam purushena sarvam. I know that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all material conceptions of darkness, only he who knows him can transcend the bonds of birth and death. There is no way for liberation other than this knowledge of that Supreme Person. And the word is person, purusham. There is no true superior to that Supreme Person, because he is, Prabhupada's going on with this translation, because he is the supermost. He is smaller than the smallest, and he is greater than the greatest. He is situated as a silent tree, and he illumines the transcendental sky. As a tree spreads its roots, he spreads his extensive energies. From these verses, one can conclude that the Supreme Absolute Truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all-pervading by his multi-energies, both material and spiritual. Marta paratanam nanyat, kinchirasti janandaya maya sarvamidam protam sutre maya. O conqueror of wealth, there is no true superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. So the source, the underlying essence, and in the following verses, Krishna is going to give specifics of how he's that underlying essence, on the taste of water and so forth. How he's the essence, the origin and the essence of everything, that underlying thread. And we all look for our source, isn't it? Just like when children are adopted, they often want to know, who are my birth parents? Very common. Used to be, when people got adopted, everything was sealed. You couldn't find out your birth parents. Now they recognize that it's a natural human desire. You want to know, where am I from? So they allow people now, you know, once they're, at least in America, once they're of legal age. I read an interesting story of this one woman who was adopted, and at age 18 she decided to find out her history, and so she was, you know, going through the records, and finally she met with someone in the social work department, and they described her mother, and then the description of her father sounded like a police report. It sounded very strange, and she said, was my father a rapist? And the social worker looks down and says, yes, your mother was raped. And that's why she gave you up for adoption. And she went to talk to her mother, and some serial rapist, some person who raped many, many women, he'd raped her mother at knife point. And the mother had wanted to abort the baby, but at that time abortion wasn't legal. And so she just didn't want to go to an illegal abortionist. So because she gave up the baby for adoption. And now this woman is a lawyer. The child, the grown woman now, was the child. She's a lawyer, and one of the things she argues for is that you shouldn't allow abortion even in cases of rape. She said, otherwise I would have been killed. Very, very moving story. But the point is, she wanted to find out her origin. She wanted to find out, where did I come from? And similarly, we all look for what's the essence? What's the origin? Like the scientists, they're looking for the unified field theory. What is going to be the essential equation that's at the root of everything? You know, we want to get to the root. Just like she's not living anymore, but a god sister named Mula Prakriti, who's at the root of Prakriti. So to go back to the source, back and back, why do people talk about the origin of the universe? So they come up with their Big Bang theory and this bang. Why do they even talk about that? Because they want to know what is the source. Why do we want to know what is the source? Why do we care? What is the essence and what is the source?
That's a basic urge.
It is a basic urge, but why? Why can't we just go on our lives, living our lives, without worrying about where does everything come from? What is the essence of everything? What good does it do us? Why do we want to know? A sense of identity. Want to know the truth. Yes, who are we? And unless you go to your root. Actually, I know one devotee also, a very nice devotee, who recently told me this story that he was interested in Krishna consciousness, but he was really having a hard time surrendering. And just to become a devotee. So he visited the temple, he saw a picture of Nrsingadev. He didn't know what this picture was, but he became very attracted. And he just said, whoever you are, you please just destroy my material life by any means necessary. He was very new to Krishna consciousness. And a week later, he woke up at the side of the road and he didn't know who he was. He said he remembered everything he learned in school. He didn't forget, you know, how to read and write and how to eat, etc. But he couldn't remember his name. He couldn't remember his family, where he was from, anything. And he remembered praying to Nrsingadev at the temple. So he immediately went and moved in the temple, made up a name for himself. And after a couple of years, and after he got initiated, his guru said, you know, you really ought to find out who you are. And so he put up some advertisements, eventually found his family. And he said, it was a lot easier before when I didn't remember who I was. I didn't have all the baggage. He said, gradually all of his memories have come back except that one week between praying to Nrsingadev and lying on the side of the road. But that, you know, you just, who am I? Where did I come from? What's my name? What's my source? And why do we need to know our identity? Because, you know, everything we do is based on our sense of identity. You know that? When we make decisions in life, according to modern psychology, when we make decisions in life, it's all based on our sense of identity. A person thinks, I'm a very pious Indian man. So what does a pious Indian man do in this situation? That's what we think. We have like an idealized view of our identity, and we act in accord with that. It's not that people are making decisions based on, well, you know, is this good or bad? Is this good or bad in relation to who I think I am? But how do I know who I am? I try to look at the source. Who are my parents? Who are my grandparents? What's the country I'm from? But the ultimate source is different. And the ultimate source is invisible. We were just studying Kunti's prayers. One of the things she says about Krishna, you're invisible. Just exactly like, I see your pearl necklace. So glad somebody came wearing a pearl necklace. We should pass it around. Object lesson. So just like I see your pearl necklace, but I don't see the thread. It's invisible. I know it's there only by its actions. So how do we know the source? We can look within the world. Srila Prabhupada, in speaking on this verse, starts to hint at the forthcoming verses, how we can see Krishna within the world. the taste of the water, the light of the sun and the moon, the fragrance of the earth. Again, that's invisible, how that's Krishna. But if we start meditating like that, that he's holding it up, or Prabhupada also talks about how the universes and the planets are round like pearls, and Krishna's holding them up. Yeah, Krishna's holding them up in the form of Ananta Sesha, where each planet is so small, like a little mustard seed. You know, if you had a mustard seed on your head, you wouldn't even know it was there. So Krishna's holding them up, and we don't see, with our telescope, we can't see Ananta Sesha holding the planets, or to speak of holding the universes. We can't see beyond the universes. And we just say, oh, they're being held by gravity. But what is this gravity? Gravity is the force of attraction. What is this attraction? It is Krishna. So the scientists just measure, oh, there's some force of attraction. But what it is and what that force is invisible to them, or even within the atoms. I'm sure you know that all solid objects are mostly empty space. You all know that, right? You all learned that in school. Primarily empty space. What's holding the parts of the atom together? If they break the atom, such a huge force is released that a whole city blows up. And what is that force? That's the force of attraction. That's Krishna holding everything together. Prabhupada says elsewhere, like Krishna's holding everything like you hold dust in your hand. If you let go of your hand, it just falls. You know, we're just seeing that everything's operating. Like if you drive down a street, not the streets in Vrindavan, other streets, like America, or if you're very close to the center of the Delhi airport, that street, or if you go on the street between Mumbai and Pune. Can't find many examples in India. You have to go outside of India, but if you've been like right near the Delhi airport, so on that street there's order. Not here, but in most places in the world, on the streets there's order. The cars stay on their side of the road. Such a terrible example here in Vrindavan. They stay on their side of the road and they follow the laws. You don't see the government, but the government must be there. So if you've never left India, you're not going to relate to this at all. But in most parts of the world, you can see that the government is present in your room, where your power outlets are. You know, at least in America, you have to have power outlets. You can't just stick wires to the walls. So the government is there. The government is invisible. You go into a house, the government is invisible. But they're there by the codes being followed. They're there by the laws being followed. The traffic lights are changing colors. You don't see the prime minister, you don't see the president. The person is invisible, but the person is there. They're there by their actions, just like the thread is there by the fact that the pearls don't fall. So on this first level of Mata Paratananyat, first we can just understand in relation to matter, in relation to the material world, there is a person holding everything up. Nothing is random. Behind all the events in our lives, if you took all the events in our life and put it together, each event like a pearl, holding them together is Krishna. Holding everything together in this world is Krishna. We can know that for ordinary objects, these mats, simple thing, this mat is a very simple thing, but putting it all together must have been a person, and a person's intelligence, and a person's energy, although it's quite simple. And they have to be a person with reasonable intelligence, probably have to be at least 5 or 6 years old. You know, 1 year old or one of the local monkeys couldn't have made this mat. Or make that share. What to speak of a flower that can reproduce and create a plant that then creates another flower and is so intricate and involved. So in that way, Mata Paratrananya, that you don't see him, you don't see somebody going and painting all the flowers. Like we'll see in a mural, if you do it, like in the temple when there's murals. you might see someone painting. You don't see somebody going and painting all the marigolds, but there is somebody, just unseen. And we may not see somebody in each event of our life. It seems like it's just happening. Things are just happening randomly. And every once in a while we see there's a thread, isn't it? Every once in a while you see there's a thread. There was one devotee I was looking for in Mayapur, didn't see her. And then one morning here, I saw her in the temple room. And you think of the timing, she was only here that one day. And the timing that I had to walk in the door at exactly the right second, and she happened to be just going out the door, and somehow, you know. And sometimes those things happen, and you say, oh, there's Krishna. The timing is just extraordinary, or the coincidences are just beyond coincidence, that you can't explain it any other way than, oh, that must be Krishna. Hey, everybody's had this experience where the thread shows a little bit between the purples. Oh, there's a thread. Another way, so that way within the material world, within our personal lives. And then Prabhupada's talking here about levels of transcendental realization. So most people, Manusyanam Sahasrasu Kastyadyanati Siddha, Yatatamapi Siddha, Nam Kastyan Vambeti Tatvata, also in this chapter. That most people don't care about transcendence, especially in Kali Yuga, but Krishna spoke this verse even before Kali Yuga. So what to speak of now? Most people are not interested in transcendence. Most people are interested in money and sex and a nice car and things like that. So all the people who are interested in transcendence, some of them achieve transcendence, but those who achieve transcendence generally achieve the Brahman. I mean, there are people on this planet now who've achieved Brahman realization. I've met some of them. And they think there's no person. Brahmeti, Padmatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Sabjate. It's also the truth. Brahman is also the absolute truth, but Prabhupada said your supreme absolute truth. There's something beyond that. The Brahman is just Krishna's effulgence. So such people argue, well, personality is limited. Arupa must mean no form. But actually, no form is limiting. Just like some people are born without hands, they're more limited. It's not that they're more unlimited. The more of a form you have, the more unlimited things you can do. Or I really love the example of language. So like a little baby, their sounds are formless. There's no form to them, there's no grammar. How much can you express? How much can the baby express? Or just... I know, there's one lady who claims she can differentiate between the and the
Parents enjoy it.
She has all...
Parents enjoy it.
Yeah, they enjoy it.
They do.
Yes, that's true. But anyway, there's one woman who says she can tell the difference, she can train you to tell the difference between the and the and. You can tell if the baby has upper gas or lower gas or this or that. And she has a whole course. But it's basically just formless sound. How much can you express? You cannot express the poetry of Shakespeare with just and, and. You have to have form. You have to have specific words. You have to have grammar. What is grammar? It gives form. You can say, well, grammar is so restricting. I'm sure that many students feel like that when they're in fifth grade. Grammar is so restricting. But no, grammar is freeing. When you know the rules of grammar, when you follow the rules of grammar, you can express anything. You can express unlimited numbers of things. And if all you have is just, what can you express? There's one man like that here in Vrindavan, one of the rickshaw rollers who can't talk. There you go. He just go like, you don't know what he's saying. Right? So formless is much more limited. And you can say, well, but form is limited, that I'm here and I'm not there. If I'm formless, I can be everywhere. But Krishna has a form that can be everywhere. Now, our conceptions of time and space don't apply to him. Krishna doesn't have a form that's limited by time and space. The first element of illusion is time. Krishna exists beyond illusion, where there's no time. For Krishna, past, present, and future are all present. As he showed in the universal form, he showed past, present, and future all at one time, and all place in one place. All space in one place, all time at one time. Krishna's conceptions of time and space are radically different from ours. Ekopi sorajayam jagananda koti ashaktirasti jagananda chayayananta andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. He's in the atom and the universe is inside him. The universe is inside him. And inside that universe is many atoms, and he's inside each of those atoms, and inside each him, inside each of those atoms is a universe. That's beyond space. So Krishna has a form that the universe is inside in his belly. Mother Yasoda is seeing it. And she's seeing herself. She's not seeing a picture of herself, or a reflection of herself, or a vision of herself. She's seeing herself. How do you see yourself? How do you stand outside Krishna, Lord Brahma said, and look inside Krishna and see yourself? And how, Lord Brahma said, how am I in you and seeing you outside? So our understandings of space and time, that's part of our illusion. We're trying to fit Krishna into our illusion. Space is the first of the great material elements. It's part of Maya. Space doesn't exist like that in Goloka Vrindavan. Prabhupada says there, 1 + 1 = 1 and 1 - 1 = 1. They have a different mathematical system. So if you've got your PhD in mathematics here, when you go there, it's useless. You won't be able to use any of your formulas. The two parallel lines will never meet in Pythagorean theorem and all that. It won't work there. And it doesn't work with Krishna. I mean, look, even Einstein said that the law of relativity, that in different parts of the universe, time and space would operate differently. He was right. For Lord Brahma, time and space is quite different. Even for Indra, time and space is very different than it is for us. What to speak of for Krishna? So to say that just because Krishna has a form, it must be a form that's limited by time and space is rather childish. To think that the rules on this planet as I experience them are the rules that must apply everywhere is very childish. How do we know that? Why would we assume such a thing? It's foolish. It's like if you're 6 years old and you say, the rules in my classroom are the rules for everybody. No. So when you're 6 years old, you cannot subtract 5 from 3. That's against the rules. If the six-year-old brings their mathematics, here's 3 - 5. The teacher will say, no, that is not allowed. No, but when you're in 12th standard, that is allowed. And adults do it all the time with their credit cards. And so, this is just foolish. And the six-year-old will say, Mommy, you can't do that. That's against the rules. And so we're looking at Krishna and saying, oh, you're not following our rules. Oh, I remember one time one of my students said to me, teacher, why don't you have to raise your hand before you speak? And I said, then who will call on me? And so we were thinking like that. No, Krishna has to follow by my rules. But form is higher than formless. In every aspect of our life, form is higher than formless. Form can do more than formless. Form can express more than formless. Just like now there's this abstract art, just formless colors. I guess you can look at it and one person says, well, I feel this and I feel that. But what is it expressing? Nobody really knows. But as soon as there's form, then again, there's unlimited ability of expression. And of all of the forms of Godhead, Krishna is the highest. Of course, not everyone agrees with that. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopakumara went to Vaikuntha, the residents of Vaikuntha, they said Narayan is the highest. And Lord Kapila Devi says that the Lord appears in whatever form the devotee wants to worship him. So we're looking for that in our human relations. When a man and woman get married, each of them is thinking that the person I marry is going to be the perfect person for me. And it doesn't quite work like that. They find the person they marry is perfect for them in some ways and not perfect for them in other ways. But Krishna becomes for each devotee. In Canto 10, Chapter 13, Sanatana Goswami says that Krishna has a particular quality that especially attracts an individual jiva, and that Krishna is experiencing a particular relationship from each individual jiva that he doesn't have with anybody else. So there's a special quality in Krishna that attracts me and you and you and you and each of us. And there's a particular quality in me that attracts Krishna that nobody else has. So everyone is seeing that particular form of Krishna as supreme. Mother Yasoda is seeing the child form of Krishna as supreme. Right? Lalita and Vishaka, they're seeing the adolescent form of Krishna as supreme. And the cowherd boys are seeing Krishna's boy form as supreme. The residents of Vaikuntha, they see the Narayan form as supreme. Of course, we can say, based on Shastra, especially today's verse, that the form of Krishna is the highest form. May not be the highest form for a particular individual, for Hanuman. He might say, yes, yes, Krishna is the highest form, but not for me. Right? Just like we're studying, about to study about Bhishma. So Bhishma is glorifying the gopis, but that's not his interest. His interest is Parthasarathi. So he might recognize, yes, the gopis are worshipping the highest form, but it's not the highest form for me. I have this, this is the form that I'm attracted to. This is the form I consider the highest form. So one could argue logically, if one has an idea of God as being majestic, that Narayan is a higher form than Krishna because Narayan is more majestic, more God-like. So if you're going to decide that the highest form of God is the form that is the most God-like, then you will have to pick Narayan. But if you're going to say the highest form of God is the form which displays the most variety of rasa, Krishna also displays God-like rasa. So which form is rasa-raj? Because Krishna displays activities and rasa that Narayan doesn't. Krishna displays everything Narayan displays, but he displays something Narayan doesn't. Krishna displays everything Ramachandra displays, but some that Ramachandra doesn't. And everything the Sangha and Matsya and Karma and Brahma displays, but some that they don't. So he displays more. Some things you want, you will not be able to find in Rome. Like the sages of Namasharanya, they said, we want to marry, and he said, sorry, only one wife this lifetime. Even when Sita died, he didn't take another wife. People think one wife in modern times, they think one wife means one wife at a time. And sometimes it's a very short time. I had this one wife for 1 week, now another wife for 1 month. And then they're very proud of their monogamous culture. Heart. That's not actually the one wife vow. The one wife vow isn't one wife at a time. The one wife vow is one wife for life. Right? When Sita was banished, Ram didn't take another wife. When Sita went into the earth, Ram didn't take another wife. He stayed on the earth for another, 36,000 years. And he didn't take another wife. When there was need for a wife, because according to the Vedas, the man must perform yajna with his wife. So he made a deity of Sita. Right? Later on, Vishnupriya had a deity of Gauranga. But anyway, the point is the sages of Namasharanya, they fell in love with Ram. And they said, we want to marry you. Now, they were devotees. I mean, Shirpanika also fell in love with Ram and wanted to marry him, but she was willing to kill Sita to achieve her objective. And the sages of Namasharanya, they weren't demons, they were devotees. And they can understand, you know, Ram is just not going to do that. It's not his mood. In that incarnation, Sita has him exclusively. As Narayan, Narayan has more than one consort. Krishna has so many consorts, but Ram only one consort.
Krishna has only one, but he manifests. Krishna manifests.
Oh, Krishna has so many.
But he manifests in 16th alone.
Yes, so each one of them gets to have him alone.
There's one only.
One only. Yeah, but in Rai Rasa Leela, sometimes they're all sharing the most. Different. But the point is that Ram really only has one.
The gopis also he manifests.
Yes, but still it's different because Ram only has one. Maybe from the point of view of the queens and the gopis, they each have Krishna. But from Krishna's perspective, he has so many. But from Ram's perspective, he only has one. So my point is those desires that the sages had, they couldn't be fulfilled with Ram. That's my point. So therefore we can say Krishna is the highest, because Krishna can fulfill any aspiration of anyone. Whereas Krishna's other manifestations can fulfill some aspirations, but not others. A different mood. And Krishna encompasses everything. He's Rasaraj. Therefore we say he's the ultimate. But we don't have any quarrel if somebody's a Ram Bhakta. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would try to get the Ram Bhaktas to be Krishna Bhaktas. But if they wouldn't, then he was happy also. That one Ram Bhakti was so happy. You know that one Ram Bhakta in South India? He was in this ecstasy that he was in the forest with Ram and Lakshman. He invites Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I love this story, he invites Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for lunch prasadam. So Mahaprabhu comes to his house. Imagine you come to someone's house for lunch and they haven't started cooking. You're like, you invited me for lunch, but there's no lunch. And the Brahmin said, I can't cook. Mahaprabhu says, why? He says, because Ravan has kidnapped Sita. How can I cook? And Mahaprabhu said, no, nobody can touch Sita. You know, the Brahmin's crying and crying. He says, no one can kidnap Sita. He says, he kidnapped a false Sita, Maya Sita. No demon can touch real Sita. So somehow the Brahmin was pacified. And he cooked, although it was a very late lunch. And then when Mahaprabhu was traveling, he found the Korma Purana, which had the story of how Sita manifested a shadow form. And it was in those days, the books were not printed books. They were handwritten manuscripts. So Mahaprabhu, he wanted this Brahmin to be convinced. He didn't want the Brahmin to have any doubt. So he asked the head of the temple, can I have the original page? Imagine. And the original page. And they made a copy and they put the copy in the book and Mahaprabhu took the original and then he retraced his steps. He went back. He was walking and he went back to see that Brahmin. Here's the evidence. Here's the proof. How much Mahaprabhu loved that Ram Bhakta. So much. So we have no quarrel if somebody wants to worship, like Bhishma was worshipping Parthasarathi, he's one of the Mahajanas. But still we can say Krishna is the highest. Krishna is the most complete. Matta Paravanam Nanya. There's nothing beyond Krishna, and Krishna especially Vrindavan Krishna. Especially Vrindavan Krishna. Again, we have no quarrel with Krishna in Mathura and Krishna in Dwarka. Some devotees will be attracted to go to Dwarka or go to Mathura or Hastinapur. We don't say, we're not like these other religious systems that says you have to do it exactly this way. Oh, you're not worshiping Krishna in Vrindavan. Oh, rascal. Isn't that our mood? But we're still saying, come worship Krishna. So sweet. Madhurari Padera Kilama Madhura. Whatever you want, you will find in Krishna. And especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving this Krishna. There's nothing sweet. Whatever you want. Krishna is even rascally. You know, Ram is not a rascal. I mean, a little bit maybe when he killed Bali, but generally no. Narayan is never a rascal. Krishna even stands crooked. Narayan is always standing straight. Krishna lies and cheats and steals. I didn't steal any butter. You know, he's got butter all over his face.
That is the Leela he performs.
Yes, it's so sweet. It's so sweet, everything's there. Anything we can want, nothing higher. So once we're actually convinced, because everybody wants the best. I mean, sometimes we settle for second best because that's all we can afford. You know? We'll take the copy of the best. We'll take a little piece of glass instead of a diamond because we can't afford a diamond. But everybody would like to have the best. Just like now in India, they're thinking the Americans are the best and they're trying to copy. They don't copy it very well, though. But everyone is thinking like that. You know, get all the advertisements for soda, it's the real thing. Everybody wants the real, of course that's not the real thing. It's just sugar and water and acids and flavors. But everyone, we all want the best. We want that thing, like Bali Maharaj said to Vamadeva. Vamadeva asked him for 3 paces of land. We just celebrated Vamana's appearance. And Bali Maharaj said something very extraordinary. He said, no, you should ask me for something so great that you'll never need to ask anybody for anything ever again. Could Bali give something like that? He was a little proud. So Vamadeva with his pride. But that's what Krishna can give. Krishna can give something so great that you're full, you're satisfied, and you have nothing more to ask. And when Krishna comes and says, ask something, you just say, oh, I just want more service. Or Maharaj Prithu says, I just want more ears. An interesting thing to say. You know, God shows up, what would you like? Millions of ears. Right? Rupa Goswami was saying, we want millions of ears and millions of tongues. I just want to do more of what I'm doing. When one gets Krishna, one doesn't want anything else. You say, what do you want? What do you want? I want to give you something. I want to give you something. You ever have somebody like that? It's hard to get them a gift. I have some people like that. I say, I want to give you something. They say, I don't need anything. So once somebody has Krishna, they don't need anything else. They don't even think about their needs. They don't even think about themselves. It's all taken care of. They're just focused on Krishna. You can't imitate that, by the way. It doesn't work. If you imitate that, it turns out a little weird. I'm just surrendered to Krishna when you're not, you know. Work very well. But when you're actually filled with Krishna, you don't need anything else because you have everything. Like you have a million dollars. You don't need $10. You go to Bill Gates and you say, would you like $10? He said, why? I already have everything. So Krishna is the ultimate because he's fully satisfying. So with this verse, we should look for, where is Krishna in my life? Where is the thread under the pearls? Where's the thread that connects everything in my life? Where's the thread under whatever I see and hear and smell and touch and taste as we're going on in this chapter? That's the essence. Prabhupada says in this purport, the reservoir of pleasure, whatever I enjoy in this world, the source of that, if I take this little drop of enjoyment I get in this world and I follow back the source, I'll come to the reservoir, which is Krishna. Where is Krishna in my life? Prabhupada speaking on this verse that everyone has to work for a living, and that work you should see Krishna. And to become convinced that Krishna is the highest. And if I go for the highest, everything else I want will be included. I don't have to go for them separately. Everything else will be included. Everything I want, anything I can desire, anything I can achieve. Because there's nothing higher, there's nothing more. Mata para taram nanya. Para means other. There's not some other, there's not some lack. In this world I get something, but there's always something that's not there. Right? Like I have a nice place to stay, but it doesn't have stable electricity. So electricity is constantly going off, off, off. So it lacks something. There's something lacking. It doesn't have very good ventilation. But it's a nice place. that there's something lacking. You follow? It's always like that. If we look at our body, does everyone's body all of you have something lacking? Something that's not quite right. Or in our personality, do everybody have something lacking that you're not quite satisfied with? I wish I could be a little more of this or a little less of that. And in our families, you know, I'm sure there's something lacking. I wish my relationship with my father was a little more of this, or my wife was a little more of that. Or in the place where we live, or the temple that we're part of, whatever we have, the clothes we have, the food we're given, whatever it is. This morning I had some jalebis, and I thought, if only they were a little less sweet. So whatever it is, there's always something other, that something's not, it's not perfect. And if it is perfect, it doesn't last. The calling of a shasvatam. So then the lacking is it's temporary. You got all the perfect place and the perfect spouse and the perfect this, and then it's temporary. With Krishna, there's nothing other. There's nothing lacking. It's not that there's some other thing beyond Krishna that you also need. In this world, I get this thing, oh, but I need this too. And I also need this. And I also need, and then what about this? And what about this? With Krishna, that's all. You don't have to add something. You don't have to tinker with it. You don't have to adjust it. You know, Krishna, we need some adjusting. We need to change you a little bit and take you to a therapist to make you more like what I'm watching. Perfect. Om Puramada Puramida. There's a school we visit in London. It's run by these people. They have an interesting mix of Christianity and Sankaracharya for their philosophy. And they teach the Vedas. They teach the Vedas. We were there, we heard 10-year-old girls, British girls, not Indian girls, British girls, reciting perfectly the Rig Veda with all the intonations, perfect Sanskrit. So when we went there, the teacher was showing off their Sanskrit, and she said to the students, please, for these Hare Krishna people, please recite the perfect prayer. And they said, Om Purnam. Except they said it much better than I say it because their Sanskrit is impeccable. But they were saying, Om Purnamada Purnamida Purnamada. Perfect prayer. Krishna is perfect. He's complete. From him, all the complete comes. If you take the complete away, still the complete remains. There's nothing beyond. So as we see Krishna in our lives, we'll see that everything that we enjoy, everything we relish, everything we like, is actually Krishna. And that when we find Krishna, we will find everything that we want and we like in complete perfection. And we'll never need to look anything else. We'll never need to even think about anything else. We'll never even have to think about ourselves at all. We'll only need to think about serving Krishna, because everything with ourselves will be automatically and fully satisfied. So I can take a few questions, and then I've got to go back to planning my lesson on Grandfather Bhishma, or I won't be able to teach Tuesday afternoon. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections, chastisements, etc.
Krishna is also being, so everybody wants to become Krishna.
Everybody wants to become Krishna so they can be supreme? Yes, that's a problem.
That's the ego.
That's the ego, yes. You can become Krishnas. We are part of the quality of Krishna. So we are one with Krishna in quality. And Krishna sometimes exalts his devotees above himself also. You can't become the complete whole. You can become in union of love with the complete whole. I mean, Krishna's so kind, he even gives the devotee. Krishna's not at all envious. Even the devotees sometimes do feel their Krishna. Like Prahlad Maharaj, sometimes he would feel that oneness with Krishna. And the gopis, when they were in separation from Krishna, you know that story, right? They started actually feeling that they were Krishna. They were experiencing the ecstasy of Krishna. So Krishna is not envious or greedy. The devotees get to experience his ecstasies also. So if you're purely in love with Krishna, just like Krishna likes to experience what it's like to be his devotee, so the devotees sometimes like to experience what it's like to be Krishna. And they do, because they're not envious.
But the conditioned souls, they want to experience what it's like to be Krishna out of envy. They want to push Krishna out of the center of Vasudeva and dance there themselves. So the gopis are not envious. In their love for Krishna, sometimes they feel the ecstasies of Krishna. So everything is available for the pure devotees. Everything. That oneness is also there. Chintaveda Vedita. We also believe in the oneness. We do not deny the oneness. We do not say there is no oneness in perfection. What we say is there is not only oneness, but there is also oneness. So that's also there. Everything is there. It's not that there's some aspect that is denied to the devotees. Yes.
You said the sages of Naimisharanya, Lord Ramchandra?
Not Naimisharanya, Dandakaranya, sorry. Oh, thank you. See, I got a correction. Thank you. Thank you. Sorry. Yes. Not Naimisharanya, Dandakaranya. Thank you. Ramchandra's not wandering in the Naimisharanya. I mean, maybe he did too when he was looking for Sita, I don't know, but that was it was the sages of the Dandakaranya forest.
When you were telling the stories about the road, I told the kids here in Vrindavan in the middle 70s in America, we had a road called Freeway, and on this road they drive 100 kilometers an hour, and there's no animals and no cross traffic, and they yelled for their friends. They said, come, hey, come listen to the story this American made up. No, it's real. They did not believe it until years later when they got TV. I had to tell them that. Did you see it on TV?
Well, the Americans wouldn't believe the stories about the Indians either.
No. That's what we tell. What's outside of our experience, we think it can't happen.
We think it can't happen. If you tell somebody in America what the Indians are like, they would not believe it. You have to show them a video, and even then they don't believe it. They say, you sure this is a real video? Maybe you created it on the computer. Somebody else? Thank you very much. I'll wish you a good one.